be what we could describe as somewhat of a basis for their faith, for their friendship. And that is a common faith that they shared in God. As you begin to meet people in the world, whether it be in school or in the workplace, you're going to face different people from different backgrounds. You'll face people that may have similarities to you in some ways and differences from you in other ways. But I think it's very important for you to consider whether or not those are people that have faith in God, that have the same kind of values that you have. If you find that it's different, if you find that they value things that you can't share their values in, then it's probably important for you to recognize that maybe that's not the best person for you to choose as a friend. On the other hand, if you encounter those that believe in God, if you encounter those that share your convictions, if you encounter those that have a faith in God and a faith in His Word, then that can serve as a solid basis for a friendship. When we look at the examples of both David and Jonathan, it is very clear that both men were characterized by a strong faith in God. Turn in your Bibles, if you haven't already, to 1 Samuel chapter 14. And I want us to notice in the life of Jonathan an example of this. You will remember that in the days in which both Jonathan and David were alive, the kingdom of Israel often found itself in conflict with enemies that were of the nation of the Philistines. And in one occasion that I'd like us to note in First Samuel chapter 14, we see faith demonstrated very clearly on the part of Jonathan. In a situation in which the people of God, the Israelites, were encamped against the Philistines, there was a situation in which, as the two kind of were within sight of one another, Jonathan decided that he would very courageously take an assault by himself with his armor bearer against the Philistines. Now I want you to notice that in doing so, he was respecting the promises that had been made, peculiar to the Israelites, that when they were faithful to the Lord, God would grant them victory in battle. We should not act presumptuously in our day and age to imagine, well, if I feel strongly about something, that means that God is approving of that. But I want you to notice that in a time in which there were very specific promises about God's care for His people, listen to the faith of Jonathan in 1 Samuel chapter 14. Read with me verses 6 through 10. Then Jonathan said to the young man who bore his armor, "Come, let us go to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us." Notice this demonstration of faith. "For nothing restrains the Lord from saving by many or by few." So his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Go then. Here I am with you according to your heart." Then Jonathan said, "Very well. Let us cross over to these men and we will show ourselves to them. If they say thus to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place and not go up to them. But if they say to us, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up. For the Lord has delivered them into our hand, and this will be a sign for us." Now what's remarkable about this, if you go ahead and read the rest of the account, you will see that Jonathan does basically climb up to them. And Jonathan is victorious. But for our purposes, I want you to notice that this is a young man that believed in God. This is a young man that believed that God would honor His promises. And when we find in the life of David, we find that he was a man very much like Jonathan in his same love and respect and faith in God. Look over in 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Recently we considered David's faith last Sunday night in our song service as we thought very carefully about the kind of faith that David demonstrated. I want us to notice just an element of that in 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 34 to 37. 1 Samuel chapter 17, verses 34 to 37. "But David said to Saul, 'Your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went out after it and struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck and killed it. Your servant has killed both lion and bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. Moreover, David said, "The Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, He will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." I want you to notice that here we're familiar with this account as David goes to his brothers to take supplies to them. And we find that the Israelite camp is basically at a standstill because of their fear that has been generated because of this enormous fighter on the side of the Philistines, Goliath. But young David, as he has seen in his life already, God's deliverance against the lion and against the bear, he doesn't see any reason to fear. Not because of his own strength, not because of his own power, but he acknowledges that the Lord had delivered him in the past. And it would be no different on this occasion. I want you to notice as we think about these two examples, as we look at Jonathan and his demonstration of faith in God, and we see David and his demonstration of faith in God, could we say that this common element of a confidence and a faith in God served as a strong basis for their friendship? I want you to think about it when you think about your own life and you think about those that you encounter. The people that you choose and the friends that you make, are they going to be people that share your faith and your conviction? Will they be those kind of people that will help encourage you to do what is right and to put your confidence in God? Or instead, will they be those that will lead you in a different way? If you find that they are those that share your faith in God, then that can serve as a good basis for establishing a friendship with them. But I want us to notice something else about the relationship between David and Jonathan that I think we could describe as sort of the backbone of their friendship. And that is that they made wise and mature decisions. You know, you're going to meet people around you that will make choices, that will encourage you to throw in with them in various activities. Let's do this or let's do that. And often the basis of those choices, the basis of those decisions may be what's fun. Or maybe what is exciting. Or maybe if you're young, it may be, well, what seems like the kind of things that big people do or that adults do. You know, one of the ironies is that often when you're very young, those things that are portrayed as the kind of things that adults do or grown-ups do are often not things that are an element of true maturity, but simply those kind of things that the world has said, well, that's what grown-ups can do. You know, I don't think people ought to drink alcohol at any age, whether you're 21 or whether you are below that age. But for some reason, our world has come to think, you know, if I can imbibe in this substance, whether it's alcohol or whether it's drugs or something like that, I'll really seem like I'm a grown-up. When in fact, it's those kinds of things that lower inhibitions, those kinds of things that make us act in ways that we ought not to act. You look on the news, and you see how many people that have been respected or how many people are viewed as celebrities. They put a little bit of alcohol in their system and they begin to act like they've lost their mind. They act in ways that they ought not to act. Or when it comes to sexuality, yes, it is true that God has made it where those that are mature, those that are have reached an adulthood and have entered into a marriage relationship with one another have the privilege of that activity with a spouse. But the Bible has not made that something in which simply because you come to a certain age, you can do that with anybody that you imagine or anybody that you want to engage in that activity with. It is something that is for marriage. It is not a demonstration of being a grown-up or being mature to simply act in that way without the privilege of marriage. I want you to notice that when we're talking about friendships, when we're talking about the influence that we demonstrate on each other, do I exert an influence towards my friends that urges them and helps them to do those things that are wise and prudent, those things that are mature in their decision-making process? Or instead, do I help them go along with foolish decisions? Do I help them go along with those things that might, in fact, be harmful to them? I want you to notice in the example of these two men that their behavior in general is characterized by mature decisions, even at times when we might expect just the opposite. Over in 1 Samuel chapter 18, notice with me, 1 Samuel chapter 18, a couple of statements that are made about David. And I want us to ask ourselves as we think about, well, who am I going to be a friend with? Could this be said of myself? Could this be said of the friend that I choose? Notice here in 1 Samuel chapter 18, first verse 5. 1 Samuel chapter 18 and verse 5. So David went out wherever Saul sent him, and notice, behaved wisely. And David set him over the men of war, and he was accepted in the sight of all the people and also in the sight of Saul's servants. Skip down, if you would, to verse 14. Notice, and David behaved wisely in all his ways, and the Lord was with him. Are we going to pick friends that could be said of? In the workplace, are they trustworthy? Are they the kind of people that the boss would trust with his goods or her goods? Is it going to be the kind of people that in the classroom that teacher can trust with certain kinds of activities? Or are they going to be the kind of people that, you know, if authority turns the other direction, they're going to misbehave? They're going to do those things that they ought not to do. They're trying to get away with whatever they can get away with. I want to tell you, that's not the kind of people you want to choose to establish friendships with. I want you to notice a little further. Turn over to 1 Samuel chapter 19. I want us to notice that in the life of Jonathan, the same thing seems to be true. Jonathan was the son of the sitting king of Israel. However, we understand that because of his sin, that is Saul, the Lord had declared that David would be the future king. Now, what does that mean for Jonathan? Well, what that means is, Jonathan, who was the son of the sitting king, if all had gone well, if Saul had done what he should have done, then who would have been the next king? Well, Jonathan would have been the next king, wouldn't he? But think about what position that put Jonathan in. It would have been very easy for him to look at David, the one that God had declared would be the next king, and to see him as someone that was trying to take over something that he rightly deserved. He, after all, he should have been the heir to the throne. Why in the world would David take over what he deserved? But we never see that attitude on the part of Jonathan. Instead, he recognized, because of his faith in God, my father has sinned, and the throne has been taken away from him ultimately. But God has promised it to David. So instead of resenting David, he honored David. Even to the point at which, when Saul wickedly wanted to kill David, I want you to notice that Jonathan interceded for him. Look with me in 1 Samuel chapter 19, verses 1 through 7. Now Saul spoke to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted greatly in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, "My father Saul seeks to kill you. Therefore, please, be on your guard until morning, and stay in the secret place and hide. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. Then what I observe I will tell you." Thus Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father, and said to him, "Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been very good towards you." I want you to notice here that while Jonathan is doing what is right in the face of his father's sinful attitudes and behavior, how mature it is on the part of Jonathan that he continues to speak respectfully. He doesn't see that as an occasion in which he can act with sin towards his father. You know, his father wasn't worthy of respect, but Jonathan was still respectful. He was standing up, however, for his friend. He was standing up for what was right. He was standing up for what God had declared. Notice verse 5. "For he took his life in his hands and killed the Philistines, and the Lord brought out a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to kill David without a cause?" So Saul heeded the voice of Jonathan, and Saul swore, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be killed." Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these things. So Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. What maturity. What prudence on the part of Jonathan. You know, it's very easy in the world today, whether you're talking about young people or you're talking about adults, for people in the face of opposition or in the face of anger and resentment, to just kind of hide back and to not stand up. You know, as young people, you're going to have friends that will decide that there are certain things that ought to be done, and if you're not going to do that, then you're just a baby. If you're not going to do that, then you can't be a part of this crowd. There will be those that will try to encourage you to do things that are against the law, whether it be the law of the land or whether it be the law of God. I want you to notice here on the part of Jonathan how easy it would have been for him to go, well, you know, I don't want my dad to be mad at me. My dad's doing wrong. But you know, if I stand up against him, maybe he'll try to kill me. Maybe he'll exclude me. Maybe he'll be angry with me. He respectfully stood up to the sinful attitudes of his father and urged him to do what was right. Wasn't an easy thing to do. But what was the result? At least in this instance, he saved his friend's life. In this instance, he urged his father to do what was right, and his father actually changed his thinking. Will you choose friends that will help encourage you and those around them to do what's right? Or will you choose friends that will simply try to go along with what everybody else is doing, whether it be right or whether it be wrong? Let's look a little further at the example of these two. Turn to 1 Samuel chapter 20. 1 Samuel chapter 20. I want us to notice here that in spite of the efforts that Jonathan had made on this part, in this occasion, that unfortunately his father changed his mind and his father went back to the sinful attitudes that he'd had before. And Jonathan is forced to intercede for David once again. But at a time once again when it would have been easier for him to just stay on his father's good side. After all, he's not afraid to try to kill somebody. He could turn his anger towards Jonathan, as we'll see that he does in this account. Jonathan, nonetheless, does what's right. 1 Samuel chapter 20, read with me verses 18 through 23. 1 Samuel chapter 20, verses 18 through 23. Then Jonathan said to David, "Tomorrow is the new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty." You see, there was a plot. Saul was trying to figure out how it could be that he could overtake David. Jonathan is helping David. Verse 19. "And when you have stayed 3 days, go down quickly and come to the place where you hid on that day of the deed and remain by the stone easel. And I will shoot 3 arrows to the side as though I shot at a target. And there I will send a lad saying, 'Go find the arrows.' If I expressly say to the lad, 'Look, the arrows are on this side of you, get them and come,' then, as the Lord lives, there is safety for you and no harm. But if I say thus to the young man, 'Look, the arrows are beyond you, go your way, for the Lord has sent you away,' and as for the matter which you and I have spoken of, indeed, the Lord be between me and you forever." Then David hid in the field, and when the new moon had come, the king sat down to eat the feast. Jonathan is helping his friend. Jonathan is acting with love. He's acting with maturity. And his faith for God has not faded simply because those around him, even his own father, was no longer doing right. Read with me verses 30 to 34. Verses 30 to 34. "And Saul's anger was aroused against Jonathan, and he said to him, 'You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you have chosen the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, you shall not be established, nor your kingdom. Now therefore send and bring him to me, for he shall surely die.' And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said to him, 'Why should he be killed? What has he done?'" Listen to this. "Then Saul cast a spear at him to kill him, by which Jonathan knew that it was determined by his father to kill David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and ate no food the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had treated him shamefully." Even when those around him were doing wrong, what did Jonathan do? Jonathan behaved wisely. Jonathan behaved in a godly manner. Jonathan did what was right. Was that the kind of friend that David should have chosen for himself? Absolutely. And you and I should do no different. We should choose those friends that are going to help us, that are going to preserve us, that are going to help us do those things that are right, not lead us into those things that will harm us physically or especially spiritually. One last thing I'd like us to note before we look at something else related to David and Jonathan. Look over in chapter 23. Saul mentioned something in the last reading that we looked at. As long as David lives, Jonathan, you'll never sit on the throne. I don't know about you. It might have been very easy for me to sometimes think, well, you know, my friend David, I love him. I don't want him to die. But you know, it might be nice to sit on the throne. But you see, the problem with that is what we had noticed at the beginning of our lesson. David and Jonathan both had faith in God. And it was because of Saul's sin that Saul could no longer sit upon the throne. And it was because of that that God had already declared that David would be the next king. Jonathan was confronted. If he imagined that it might be nice to sit on the throne, Jonathan needed to recognize God had something else in mind. I want us to notice, finally, in this section, 1 Samuel chapter 23, verses 16 through 18, that his faith did not waver even in recognition of the fact, one day, David, you'll be the king. But I'm going to respect that. And I'm going to help you in that. 1 Samuel chapter 23, verses 16 through 18. Read with me together. Then Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, "Do not fear, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows that." So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord, and David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan went to his own house. You know, the friends that you make in your life are going to be an influence to you. And those friendships will have an effect in the years to come. You know, there are some who are here that I'm certain can look at friends around them that perhaps they've been friends with since childhood. And as they think about those friendships, there are consequences and there are results of those friendships. There are perhaps good ways in which the choices that were made by the friendships that were established have played out in positive ways in their life. You know, there are probably some here that can look and realize that maybe it was a friend that you made in childhood that introduced you to that man or that woman that you'd eventually marry. You know, there are results and consequences that come from wise choices in friendships. And so it was in the case of Jonathan and Saul, or Jonathan and David, that there were those who we could describe as beneficiaries of their friendships. I want to tell you about a man by the name of Mephibosheth that was a descendant of Jonathan. The Bible story indicates to us that because of this resentment that continued between Saul and David, that eventually they would come to arms against one another. Eventually, David would become king, but David would honor this covenant that he had made with Jonathan. In 1 Samuel chapter 20, verses 11 through 17, we have already noticed the covenant that was made. This is articulated even more clearly, where David promises that he will care for the descendants of Jonathan. And we learn about that in 2 Samuel chapter 9, verses 1 through 7, and in 2 Samuel chapter 21, verse 7, when at a time when many of the descendants of Saul had fallen, many of the descendants of Saul, even at a time in which the Gibeonites who sought revenge against the descendants of Saul wanted to put them to death out of honor for his covenant that he'd made with Jonathan, he spared the life of a descendant of Jonathan by the name of Mephibosheth. And what's interesting about that is Mephibosheth had not necessarily been a friend to David. It had not been that they had had the kind of kinship that Jonathan and David had had. But it was a consequence. It was a result. Mephibosheth was a beneficiary. A beneficiary is one who inherits things, is one who benefits from the estate of another. Mephibosheth had benefited from the friendship that had been established. I want you to understand that the friendships that you make will either have consequences and results. Maybe it will be that as a result of the friendship that you have, it will influence your life and your family. And maybe ultimately your children or grandchildren, as in the case of Mephibosheth. That can either be positive or it can be negative. I want us to notice one final thing as we bring our lesson to a close. We think about friendships and the importance of choosing friendships. You know, have you ever thought about the fact that God wants to be a friend to you? It may be very easy for you to think about God as so exalted and so high above us that there's no way we might think of Him as a friend. But it's important for us to recognize that God, in a very real way, in Jesus Christ, has made efforts to try to be a friend to us. He leaves it, though, for us to act in a way that is friendly towards Him. Look with me at a couple of passages that I think teaches some important principles about friendship. Proverbs chapter 18 to begin with. Proverbs chapter 18. Look with me at Proverbs 17 and verse 17. Proverbs 17 and verse 17. Notice what our text says. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. You know, when I was a kid, I remember there'd be some people that you might be friends with that in certain circumstances, they'd be your friend. If things were going a certain way, they'd be friendly to you. But you know, if other people got around, maybe the popular people got around, they might not really want to identify themselves with you. Our text says a friend loves at all times. As we think about the friendship that is demonstrated towards us by God in Jesus Christ, do you think Jesus would be described as a friend that loves at all times? Absolutely. When it meant that He had to go to the cross for us, He loved at all times. When it meant that there would be times that in our sin we would deny Him and betray Him and violate His grandeur, did He love us? He shed His blood for us. A friend loves at all times. Look now, I said Proverbs 18 earlier. I may have been thinking this. Look in Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24. Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24. A man who has friends must himself be friendly. Now stop there for just a moment, and I want you to think about that. You know, it's true in your everyday life that if you want to have friends, you can't be the kind of person that's just grumpy and cranky and you never treat anyone with kindness. If you want to have friends, you must act worthy of friendship. You must be friendly. As we think about it, as it relates to the friendship that the Lord has extended to us in Jesus Christ, we must act worthy of that friendship. We must behave friendly towards God. We do that in our obedience to Him. We do that in our love for Him. We do that in showing honor to Him. So I want you to notice the last part of this verse, because there's more to it. In Proverbs chapter 18, verse 24, a man who has friends must himself be friendly, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Now, I don't know in the text and the context of that if it specifically is talking about that friendship that is extended by God, but I think there's a strong possibility that that's what it's alluding to. Because of all of the friends that you may have in your life, of all of the relationships that you establish as a young person going into adulthood, you'll find that some will come and go. But I want you to understand something about the friendship that is extended to you by God in Jesus Christ. That is a friendship that will endure into eternity if you don't betray it. It is a friendship that is more important than any other. You know, in Scripture, Abraham is one that, because of his faith and his obedience, is uniquely described as a friend of God. We, in the same way, can demonstrate our friendship to God by either being faithful to Him, being one that loves Him at all times, whether it's popular, whether it's unpopular, whether everybody else is doing that, or whether everybody else is rejecting God. We can demonstrate our faithfulness to Him like Abraham did. I want us to end with just a couple of passages that demonstrate what it means if we will choose Jesus as our friend. Turn first, if you would, to the Gospel of John, John chapter 15. In John chapter 15, notice with me some statements that Jesus makes in verses 12 through 14. John 15, verses 12 through 14. "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you." You know, in our friendships that we make in the workplace or in school, we understand that there are certain things that define that friendship. If you're my friend, you're not going to talk bad about me behind my back. If you're my friend, you're not going to like me when you're around certain people, but not like me when you're around other people. We must understand that the same thing is true when it comes to what it means to be a friend to Jesus. Listen to what He says in the text that we just read. "You are my friends if you do whatever I command." Look, if you would, over in Luke chapter 6 and verse 46. Luke chapter 6 and verse 46. "There is no other friend that has done as much for us as Jesus has. There is no other friend that will be as faithful to us as Jesus has been." Will we demonstrate our friendship in return by our obedience to Him, by our faithfulness to Him, by loving Him at all times? Notice in Luke chapter 6 and verse 46, Jesus asked the question, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do the things which I say?" It's very easy sometimes for people to say, you know, I'm a friend to the Lord. I'm a Christian. You know, I'm doing what the Lord wants me to. But in their life, they're disobedient. In their life, they're not obeying the things that the Lord says. Jesus said in John, "If you're my friend, you'll do what I command you." Let's end with one final text. Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 through 27. Talk to us about how it can be that we define our friendship with Jesus Christ. He's offered His friendship to us. Will we return that friendship? Matthew chapter 7, beginning in verse 21. "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" Now, I want you to notice, we mentioned earlier those kind of friends that will love you at one time and then they'll distance themselves from you at another. Is that what the Lord's doing here when He describes the day of judgment as a time in which He'll say, "Depart from me, I never knew you"? I want you to notice that the distinction is that the reason He does that is because of our own behavior. If we in this life have treated Him that way, if we in this life have, by our disobedience, acted in such a way that we treat Him as if, you know, I want to be your friend when I'm at church. I want to be your friend when I'm around other Christians. But when I'm out in the world, I don't want to obey what you say. We are in essence saying to Him, "I'm not your friend then." On the day of judgment, He will simply confirm what our behavior has demonstrated. Do we act as if we are His friends, or do we reject Him? Continue reading with me. "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these things of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. And these last verses are talking about house building. They're not particularly talking about friendship. And I want us to understand that it does describe foolish action and wise action. Foolish being to hear the offer of Jesus, to hear the words of Jesus, and to reject it. Wise being to hear it and to act upon it. To hear the sayings of Jesus and to do them. Jesus says, that's what defines those who are my friends. You know, the wisest choice that we can ever make in terms of friendship is to determine in our life that we will make Jesus our friend. He has offered His friendship to us. Will we reject it or will we accept it? I hope that as we thought this morning about the example of David and Jonathan and those principles that serve as a basis and a backbone and even the results that will lead to benefit those around us, I hope that we will act wisely, but I hope especially that in our life we will choose, if we have not already, to establish Jesus as our friend. Would you not this morning confess your faith in Jesus as the Son of God? Would you not repent and turn away from sin that separates you from God and be baptized into Christ for the remission of sin? That is obedience to the command of the Lord. Would you not this morning do that? To establish your friendship with Jesus Christ. Won't you come? While we stand and sing.